Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet,
sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, I have the pleasure of having children motivational storyteller and author, AJ Rodriguez. She is our guest on the show today, and we're going to actually talk about her works of literature that she's written on her books. But to begin with, if you have any questions, feel free to give us a call at 347-324-3460, or you can post a question in the chat room. We're going to read the information on the air. AJ, welcome to the program.
Teddy bear hugs and magical wishes from the great state of Louisiana.
All right.
It's a pleasure to be with you all today.
I'm there with you. My family is from Louisiana, so from a little small town of, I think it's Broussard and Lafayette and Appaloosa. So, yeah, yeah, Louisiana is our love. I guess to begin with, kind of tell us about yourself, you know, where you're from. How did you get started in children literature writing?
Well, I'm actually a 67-year-old grandmother of six and very feisty for my age. I was born in a little town up in Pennsylvania called Ambridge, right outside of Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived like a normal, typical teenage life until I met my husband, David, who was a soldier in the United States Army.
Mm.
And we got married. I was only 18. And our first tour was of Germany. And it was magnificent. And for 19 years, we traveled all over the world. We went to China. We lived in Taiwan for 5 years. We traveled all over the world. And it's on these tours that we were traveling because the libraries were very small, no American television for my children, that I began creating this magical character called Theodore de Bear.
Mm-hmm.
And Theodore had the answer to all children's questions. Anytime my children had a question, the teddy bear would have their answer. And soon my house became the gathering ground for all of the neighborhood children. They would all come and ask Theodore questions, and they would come and anytime like a question that was answered is why dogs chase cats. You never believe why they chase cats. That's not why you think. And why canaries are yellow, and just a bunch of little stories. And I created these stories. And then as my children grew older, they didn't need Theodore anymore. So those stories all went to the back of my mind. And years later, when my grandchildren came to visit us, they asked about the stories that I had told their father. I thought these stories were all forgotten. But they asked. And I said, well, I really don't remember the stories because, I mean, it's been 30 years. And so I started creating stories all over again for them. And when they came home to Louisiana, they said they told their friends all the stories, and their friends started asking for more, and so my granddaughter called me. And unfortunately, I'd never written the stories down. They're all just in my back of my mind.
Wow.
And she was very disappointed. You know, she said, oh, but Mimi, they call me Mimi, but Mimi, you know, everybody wants to know more about Theodore. And I said, I'm sorry, but I never wrote them down. So the next year when they came to visit, as I told my stories, I started recording them. And then at night as they slept, I typed those stories up. And then I gave them to them when they came back to Louisiana. And that summer I went to a family reunion and I shared some of the stories. And the children were so enthralled with the stories that my sisters said, you need to get those published. And then began the journey of looking for a publisher, which if anybody does that, they know it's very difficult. Big publishing houses don't want to hear from unknowns. They don't accept unsolicited manuscripts. But anyway, it took 2 years to find someone. And they finally, the first person that actually read the manuscript liked it. So they, that's how Theodore was born. And over the next few years, I did a lot of trying to market my books and everything. And then it was during marketing that I started telling stories at fairs and festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And they enjoyed the story so much that I started to get notoriety as a storyteller. So we decided that because the reading ability in Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, children just are not into reading anymore, and children just are not into writing. And so we decided we would start a program called One Angel at a Time, and that's my program. And we do not charge to pay to go to schools or nonprofit organizations. I just go and talk to the children and try to encourage them to read and to write their own stories. I believe that within each person, there are stories that need to be told. I'm sure when you were growing up from Louisiana, your grandmother probably told you these old Cajun tales.
Absolutely.
Did anybody write them down? Unfortunately, a lot of stories are forgotten because no one takes the time to sit down and write those stories. You know how you always say, well, tomorrow I'm going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow rolls around
tomorrow, and guess what?
That's it. It never happens. And so I encourage children to sit down, tell their stories, write down what their history. Even if it never gets published, so what? Years from now, grandchildren and their children are going to appreciate those stories. They're going to laugh at those stories, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that you can leave to your generation that can never be taken away. The written word, once written, remains forever. And so this is something that I encourage the children to do. And this program, we pay for everything ourselves, all of our travel expenses. And is it worth it? People ask me, is it worth it? And I'm going to tell you it is. Tell you a little story. We went to Florida. We had done schools, and we visited 12 states. But we were in Florida this one time, and
mm-hmm.
this lady, it was into like our third day, and this teacher came up, and she hugged me, and she says, oh, we're so glad to have you here. You don't realize the impact you're making, what you're doing. And I said, well, we're happy to do it. Well, she said, no, you don't understand. She says, I have a 13-year-old son. She said, he had for years and years loved to read and to write. Well, when he turned 13, all his friends said, that's for sissies. You're not going to, you know, don't do that. You're a sissy. Play football. Do soccer. You know, you don't read and write stories. And she said he gave it up. But then he came to a seminar that I had given at the school, and he came home, and he started to write again. And she said, you have saved my son. That was his passion. And she said, and I told my husband, I said, see, if you can even help just one child, then you've accomplished what we set out to do with My One Angel at a Time. And it's just totally marvelous. We get letters from children thanking us for coming. We get pictures. They draw pictures of Theodore. And it's just totally, totally amazing to me. I think the most amazing thing to me is just thinking that at any given moment, somewhere in the world, a little child is reading my stories and they're laughing or they're having a good time. It's just, it's not the money. It's not the fame. What it is just knowing that I'm helping a child out there to read and to perhaps encourage him, and one day he may become a famous author.
Well,
it's just amazing to me.
What is the makeup of having a great storyteller? What ingredients, if you like, you put in a pile of gumbo, what makes a good gumbo? What makes a good storyteller?
Believing in it.
Wow.
Believing in what you're doing. I am not, people ask me, do you sit down every day and write? And I do not. I'm an inspiration writer. Something has to inspire me. There's two little stories recently, about 3 years ago. My latest story is called The Cycle of Life.
Mm-hmm.
And this story came about in a really unusual way. A dear friend of mine passed away, and his wife came to me and said, the grandchildren keep saying, where's Grandpa? When's Grandpa coming home? Will I ever see Grandpa? What happened? Where did he go? And she said, I really don't know how to answer them. And she says, I've gone to the library, and I can't find a book that's been written for children to explain death. And she said, will you write it? And I said, oh, no, Nobody wants to write a story about death. It's just, mm-hmm. you know. But that night I fell asleep, and I dreamt this story. And when my husband woke up the next morning, on the computer was this story. I don't know how it got written, but it got written. But So I took it to her and I gave it to her. And I said, this is for you to give to your grandchildren so they'll never forget their grandfather. She read it. She cried. She gave it back. And she said, give this to your publisher and let him publish it. So that's how the cycle of life came about. That story is now being used by a lot of school guidance counselors to help children deal with death. So it's a very, I don't know where the stories come from, but they just appear. Some nights my husband will wake up at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. and I'm sitting at a computer, and I'm just typing away a story. And it'll be finished, and of course I'll go back and edit, but I don't know where they come from. They just
come out, out of the universe, just come into your head, and just like in Composer, the whole story comes to you at one time. Some people had to put a story into an outline to get there or a board. Your stories just come from the beginning to the end out of your soul, and you just begin to just write it fluently all the way through to the beginning to the end. Or
right.
you don't come to chapters and whatever. You just go the beginning to the end until it stops.
The last two. Now, Theodore is a chapter book.
Okay.
I have three. My Theodore de Bear, Theodore de Bear 2, and Theodore de Bear 3, they're chapter books. Each book has between 12 and 18 stories. But, again, in those stories, it's very strange. Even though Theodore is, he's a wizard, by the way, even though his stories, I integrate other stories in there, like Why Dogs Chase Cats. It has nothing to do with wizards. But it's a story that Mimi, which is me, I'm in the book too. The book actually revolves around my family. All the characters are my grandchildren, my sons, my friends. All them, their names are in the book. But I made them the characters of the book. So now, like Theodore actually was a little German boy with a big dream. Mm-hmm. He wanted to become a wizard. So for many years, he studied very hard to become a wizard. But just as he became a wizard, the king decided that wizards were evil and there were to be no more.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to save his life, the head wizard of that time, whose name was Biz, decided to turn Theodore into something that no one would be afraid of. So he turned him into the world's first teddy bear.
Wow.
But not just any teddy bear, but a teddy bear with all the powers of a wizard. And he gave him a special book of magic and a magic crystal ball. And he told him that in the future a great wizard was going to be born. And it was Theodore's job to train that wizard in the ways of magic. And that wizard alone would have the power to turn Theodore back into a human. But if by their 18th birthday they did not discover that secret, Theodore would have to stay a teddy bear forever.
Wow.
And Theodore lived through many great adventures while he waited for the birth of that wizard. And finally in 1993, the wizard was born in New Orleans, Louisiana. And to this very day, Theodore and the other wizards live in a small town called Laplace, Louisiana.
So when you write these stories and they just fluently come to you, in the past have you always used a computer to kind of express these ideas and put it together that way, or did you ever have to do like the typewriter or the notepad and write things out?
I used to do notepads until I learned to use the computer, and I'm still not proficient on the computer. I hate the computer, but, you know, you just have to do what you have to do. I know how to get into it, and I can't do anything fancy like in word processing. You know, people can go in there and do all these kind of things. And people ask me all the time, will you send me a picture and send it? How do they send it now? Not Pixar, but they send pixels across. I don't know how to do all that. And they'll say, well, send us something, you know. I don't know how to do all that. Somebody's going to interview me on Skype. I'm just learning what Skype is now. So, you know, they'll say, we're going to Skype you. And I said, you better tell me what that is.
Well, this new stuff, you know, just all this new stuff these days. You know, ironically, last week I needed a typewriter for something. I said, my gosh, I can't find, and I had one. And when I relocated here about a year and a half ago, I've always had a typewriter. and is a typewriter. The last typewriter that I bought was a Canon, and I bought it in 1988. And it worked well. I can hook up to my computer, and it will use it. If I ever find a driver, it can use it as a printer. But every now and then I need a typewriter for something. And I use it. And I don't know what I needed it for, but I needed a typewriter. And I had a backup typewriter from a brother model, so I had two here. But ironically, my wife made me, when we relocated here, say, Tim, you have not used your typewriters in years. I said, well, I just used it maybe like to type a form a couple of years ago.
Right.
So that cannot come. And then all of a sudden I start, oh, my gosh, I had, you know, one of the best typewriters, the Canon, and it worked well, and it did all the stuff that I needed to do, and now I kind of miss it. So especially when you had something since 1988, it was 88 or 89, and worked well, and haven't had any issues. I've been preserving it, you know. And then when you look around, you can't really find one today. And the brother I wasn't too crazy about, because I didn't like how it felt. You know, when you type on it, it just felt like a toy. But the Canon was the professional ones, you know. It just, when you, and I'm a keyboardist, a piano player, and I just like how it glides. It's like typing on a Steinway piano versus, you know, just a name brand. But it's kind of ironic also, when I was in college, we had to do 20-page papers, and we only had, you know, you do it on a typewriter, or you hire somebody, or you had to go figure that machine out in the computer room that most of us can figure it out. But I guess I was the old way, and you know, I got adapted to computers, and because I had a computer in my room for the longest, towards the end of college, but I understand when you say this technology. And when you do your stories and when you compile them together and you finally got someone to publish that, what the process you went through in order to get your book finally with a publisher who read it and loved it and said, I'm going to publish it?
Well, at first I went on the computer and I researched the companies that did children's books. Mm-hmm. That's the first step I would think to do, because you're not going to send it into a publisher that does adult books. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And then you send a letter of inquiry. I sent a letter explaining exactly what I did, and I got back a lot of letters that said, we're not accepting unsolicited manuscripts. So it took me 2 years. I kept saying, you know, I didn't give up, and that's the main thing. You can't give up. But then I discovered this place called Publish America. I don't know if you've ever heard of Publish America.
Mm-hmm.
But Publish America, they have about 25,000 authors in their repertoire of different books. And I went to them. The only problem that I have with Publish America is that they do not edit their books very well. So later on I found a lot of typos and different things in there, because I'm not a perfect typist when it comes to computers and all this kind of things. And it wasn't that it was misspelled, because I did the spell check. It was just that when I wanted to say is or something, it might say as, you know, because mm-hmm. it's a recognized word. But they didn't catch, maybe in each book I'd find one or two typos, and I was kind of disappointed in that, because I'm a perfectionist at heart. I want everything to be just, you know, just so. But and then they don't do a lot of marketing, which to me is very, very difficult. They do put your books like on Amazon and Barnes and Nobles and all that, but they don't do marketing. More or less, the marketing is left up to you.
Wow.
And it's very difficult. If you're unknown, you can't become known. You know, it's just it's like a catch-22 situation. But then again, they were the only ones that would accept my manuscript. So it's kind of a catch-22. And I thought, well, if I send it into them and it gets popular, then a bigger publishing company might pick me up. But that never happened. But that's all right, too, because I've sold a couple thousand books, and they say that the average sales of books is about 600 for unknown authors, and I've sold thousands. So I can't really complain, and I enjoy it. It keeps me young, you know. My husband and I are both in our late 60s now, and It just keeps us going. It gives us something to look forward to, our little trips to different states and, you know, visiting schools. It just gives us something to look forward to. My storytelling includes hand puppets, and my husband stands in the back of the room. We allow the children to participate, and he stands in the back of the room and he shows the kids what to do with the puppets. So it's just a lot of fun for us, you know, and we get to meet a lot of people. So it's very interesting. We've gone to a lot of book signings, and we get invited to festivals and fairs, so we get to attend a lot of different festivals and fairs all over the country. So it's just fun.
Wow. We're going to take a break for a moment, and
okay.
We'll be back in a few minutes. We'll take a station break and be back and talk more about your book.
Okay,
and hopefully
great.
You can read the story from it.
All right.
Right. One second.
You're listening to The Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida, is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com. Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Tim Jacquet. Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.